before Rosa Parks. I did an interview in L.A. a while back with Larry King, and he was telling me that the first time he interviewed Martin Luther King, he introduced him as the founder of the Civil Rights Movement. And Martin Luther King stopped and said, Larry, I'm sorry, I have to correct you. I'm not the founder. Jackie Robinson was.
That's and it's so true. Now, what do you... Do you know the guy, well, Jackie Robinson, and this is in no way to diminish anything that's happened with him, but a guy who, Larry Doby must have had a really tough go at it, too. I mean, here's a guy that, he was the second, you know, he was the first in the American League, and second, he came in July of 47. It's the same year dealing with the same type of issues.
It's sad because he really didn't get the recognition that Jackie did. And I think part of it was because he really didn't play much that year. They benched him. They didn't want him on the team. They didn't want him play.
They didn't want to subject it to the abuse.
Right, exactly. I mean, at least Jackie had Branch Rickey who pushed the envelope, you know.
Did in any of your conversations, did you and he talk about Larry Doby?
Yes, we did. Yeah, he liked Larry, and he had a great deal of respect for him. They were friends. They met many, many times, of course, and they were very good friends.
That's neat. Ron, do you know what the number is? Did you ever add up how many times or how many letters there were back and forth, or are there too many to count?
Should I say 42?
Well, 42 would be. I'd think it'd be more like 420 or 4200. But
yeah, you're right. There were a lot of them. You know. And you know what's so amazing, Bob, is after he retired from baseball, what he did, I mean, he used to raise money to rebuild many churches in the South that were burned to the ground. He founded the Freedom National Bank in Harlem because other financial institutions were discriminating against African Americans by denying them loans or setting interest rates artificially high. So, I mean, he did so many other things, you know, it's more than just baseball. He was... And wait a minute, just about Rachel Robinson, his wife, his widow. I mean, just imagine, she was in the stands that first year. She was the wife that was allowed to travel with the team. Just imagine her sitting in those stands, listening to all these catcalls, watching her husband get hit by a ball in the head. And remember, they had no helmets in those days. They just wore a baseball cap. And, I mean, it was very frightening. She's a magnificent woman. She's going to be at Dodger Stadium tonight throwing out the first pitch.
At 92.
At 92. God bless her. She is just wonderful. I heard from her recently, and she just wanted to thank me for all I've done keeping Jackie's memory alive. She's a magnificent woman.
Now, have you stayed in touch at all with her? Did you get to know any of his children? Because I believe he had Jackie Robinson Jr., David Robinson, and Sharon Robinson.
That's right. Well, Jackie Jr. was about a year younger than I was, and we had a lot of similarities. I mean, I was playing Little League ball, he was playing Little League ball, things like that. I went to camp, he went to camp, and unfortunately he died young.
He died young.
It was really a sad story. And Sharon Robinson is a vice president with MLB in education, and she and I have been very close. And we've gotten together many times here in Minneapolis. And then David is in Tanzania. He started a coffee farm there and got all jobs for all these people to grow coffee. And it's called Sweet Unity Farms. And so each one of the children in their own right have given back to this country. And it's wonderful.
Well, you know, it's very neat. Now, what will you? You're at the Twins game now, or you'll be there tonight?
I'll be there tonight on the field. Yeah, it's for the opening ceremony.
You will be on the field. Now, who's throwing out the first pitch tonight?
I'm not sure, Bob. I'm not sure of that. But you know, it's going to be such a thrill as it is every year to watch every ball player wearing number 42. It's just amazing. You know, I remember, I'm sure you saw the movie 42.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. And you remember the one line in there when Pee Wee Reese went over to Jackie and put his arm around him?
Yep, put his arm, yep.
And he said, maybe someday we'll all be wearing 42. And, God, it's true. It's just a wonderful honor.
Now, Ron, how many jerseys do you have, or how many baseball shirts with 42 on them do you have? I'm sure you got a few.
I've got one my wife got me that says Rabinovitz on the back instead of Robinson with a 42 and a Dodger.
Well, sure, it looks good. Now, he never gave you... What's the best piece of memorabilia you have of his, or is it the letters?
just the memories. I mean, he gave me balls. He gave me a bat. I mean, you know, I never asked for an autograph. I never asked for anything. I never was a pest. Give me. I never did that. I always just wanted to be with him and listen to him and talk to him. And he used to give me all these things. One time he took me into the locker room in Milwaukee. And, you know, at that time, there was a big sign on the locker room door, warning, do not enter, you trespass, you can go to jail. So he takes me in, and I said, oh, my God, I'm going to jail. So he takes a brand-new ball. He takes me from locker to locker to locker. All my heroes there, Duke Snider, Pee Wee Reese, Roy Campanella, Don Luca, Carl Ferrillo, Sandy Koufax was a rookie that year. They're all shaking my hand, patting me on the back.
Oh, how neat.
Going locker to locker. I mean, I was numb. Can you imagine? And he was so busy with that, he forgot to sign the autograph himself. But I got plenty of them from him.
All right, where's the ball now, the one you got signed by everybody but him?
How do you like this? You know what? We used to play catch with these balls like dummies.
Oh, Ron.
I mean, we had grass. I mean, in those days, I mean, listen, I had every baseball card from 1951 on. And I had them in teams. If a guy was traded from the Reds to the Phillies, I'd cross out Reds and write
Don't Phillies. Tell him you put him in the spokes of your bike.
Oh, sure. Most kids did. I'll bet you did, too.
Oh, Ron. You know what, Ron? I think if I went back to my mother's home in Jersey and climbed into the attic, I'd find some of those cards, probably eaten by, you know, mice or something. But I think I put all of them up there decades ago. I need to get up there and take a look. Hey, Ron, thanks so much for joining us. Ron Rabinowitz, been a pen pal and a good friend of Jackie Robinson's, and we want to talk to Ron today on Jackie Robinson Day, 68 days to the day that Jackie Robinson broke into baseball and changed the game. Ron, thanks so much.
You bet. Thanks for inviting me, Bob. Take care.
You too. Have fun tonight. We're going to come back, talk some more baseball. We'll be joined by Pete Wagner. He does On the Deck Radio from 11 to noon on the ticket with one of our two guests is Gene Larkin, the former Twins hero of the 91 series, and Al Newman. We'll be joined by Al and Pete when we return.
Do you live for hunting and fishing? Tune in to Ticket Outdoors with Brian Zepp.
Jerry Yellen, a World War II fighter pilot, served our country most honorably as a captain.
We were constantly reminded of us commitment to the other people. We were a nation of people of you, commitment to the other people. That's what you learn in the military. We learn to kill, but you learn that your life isn't worth anything without the life of the guys around you or the girls around you.
Ticket Outdoors, presented by Dan's Southside Marine. 2 hours every Wednesday at 7 on 105 The Ticket. The Bob Sansevier Show. Only on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
We are very pleased to be joined by Pete Wagner and Al Newman. Al, a former player with the Twins, of course. Pete hosts On Deck Radio with Al and Gene Larkin. And before we talk about baseball, now, Al, you're a hockey fan too, right?
I do pay attention in the newspaper. Gone to a couple of games. I try to follow the puck. Go ahead.
Well, I know Pete does. I'm going to ask Pete, too. What do you think is going to happen tomorrow night? And are both of you, do you think it's good or not so good with the selection of St. Louis's goaltender, Jake Allen?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I'm not informed with the other teams. I just know that the Wild goalie has been exceptionally good here the last 2 months.
Yeah, he has.
Probably single-handedly the guy that's got him back into the big picture. So let's hope he stays hot and the Wild can pull off one.
Now, Pete, I'm sure you have a strong opinion about Jake Allen. It seems like a heck of a call for Ken Hitchcock to make, going with him over the more veteran Brian Elliott. But the kid's been great down the stretch for him.
Well, I agree. Jake Allen is a rookie, but he's 22-7-4. He's an older rookie, 22, 23 years old, something like that. But, you know, Ken Hitchcock's won a Stanley Cup championship. He knows what he's doing. Brian Elliott's been in this league since about 2005, 2006 season. And, you know, between Iowa and St. Louis, he has never really grasped onto the job. He's been solid this year, but I don't think cup worthy. So, I mean, they're going with the rookie. I think the key thing here, Bob, is what kind of leash are they going to have on him? His team is quite good in front of him. The Wild are going to have some work to do, very capable of winning this, very capable of winning the Western Conference, no question. But they're also very capable of falling to a really good St. Louis Blues team. That really is the essence of how close this series is. And I think it's going to come down to goaltending and special teams. The Wild power play at 27% or 27th in the league, not going to be great. The Blues are much higher. I think they're fourth, something like that. The Wild penalty kill first, the Blues eighth. So, I mean, it's just going to be a matter of who wins those overtime games. And that's my opinion. And you know, it comes down to a bounce or two and who really is, I guess I got to say, a little bit in this series.
Yeah. Now, Al, I want to switch back to the Twins. We'll have, there's not exactly playoff talk now for your Twins. It's a rough start, but do you see, how much better can it get? Do you see this team pulling out and at least trying to get to 500, or is this another lost season?
Well, let's be honest. I think if we as fans were honest, we were hoping for a 500 season. And after eight games, we're already trying to pull the plug. So I'm a little early for that because we're looking at 500. And when you've been given setbacks like we have already with Nolasco going down and Santana out for 80 games, all that positive karma that was built up in training camp is gone in a matter of a phone call. So they're just trying to get back on their feet. But I think there's enough here, with May and Gibson to maybe get a little better this year and to carry that rotation. And if Hughes does what he's capable of, I do see us being a 500 ball club. But the defense has got to continue to get better. And it's been kind of shoddy here the first eight games.
Now, this is a question actually for Pete and Al. Pete Wagner and Al Newman from On Deck Radio, 11 noon on Saturdays. And Al, of course, played with the Twins. You've been in baseball for most of your life. We had Mike Gelfand on. I was on the morning show, KQ Morning Show, with him for years. And he had said the Twins, maybe, you know, if things don't get better, and they should think of trading Glenn Perkins and get something decent for him, because if you're not going to win games, you're not going to have many save opportunities anyway. Is that something, I mean, would you, at what point do you start thinking we have to shake things up?
Well, I mean, that's one of your bargaining chips. If that's one of the best chips you've got, and you can fill maybe one or two slots with him, then unfortunately for Perk, who loves Minnesota and signed an extension, it probably contains no trade clause to certain teams or it has to go through him. I think you do explore that. But honestly, guys, you know, we need three or four guys who can come in and be productive right away. When you look at this division, and that's part of the problem, the first three teams we played are within our division, and they beat us up. So we've just got to keep pushing forward. And I say we because obviously I played with the Twins, but we as fans want to see this team succeed, and we need to see some young players getting it done.
And I'm guessing, Pete, you pretty much are on the same page as that, as Al is on that one.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I think the one thing that we really concluded the show on this past Saturday was to step back and just relax for a second. You know, we know this team can hit. They were very, very productive offensively last year, especially from the second half of the season. And then really from the pitching, like Al said, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't take 400 games like that and just pull that out of the lineup for these first few weeks, first few months, like it's going to be with Santana with his, you know, expected 200 innings. But, you know, I mean, you move guys for what, and what do you have to replace them with? And, you know, but like we talk, why not, as 500 is not out of the question. And Al, I think you would agree that you're going to go through stretches where you're going to lose 5 of 6, 7 of 8, and you're going to win 5 of 6 and 7.
Oh, for sure. You hate to say back in the day, but in 87, I think we started, I mean, 91, I think we started out 2 and 5. 2 and 7. So you're going to go through these ups and downs to try to play the season in 10 game stretches and see where you're at the end of those 10 games. And again, I just think it's just been elevated. First of all, with the new manager, you're expecting positive things. And again, the season started out so negative. It had to shake the squad up, whether they want to admit it or not. I know as a former player, I would have been disappointed and felt like, wow, what else can go wrong? And then after the first start, the last goal goes down. So it's just trying to get back on your feet again and battle through it. I just like to see a few more smiles in that dugout, because you don't want to start pressing this early in the season. And when I say smiles, I mean a little more conversation. When you see the camera pan the dugout, more guys talking instead of just wide-eyed looking out in the field like what's going to happen next.
Well, you know, Al, what they should do is bring you in to give a little pep talk and remind them of the 91 season. 2-7, look what we did, fellas.
Well, you know, we had some horses on that.
Yeah, Jack Morris and Erickson, it was kind of a breakout year.
Yeah, Kevin Tappany.
Yeah, Tappany, of course,
Scott,
yeah.
Erickson and Mark Guthrie. I mean, we had some really nice pieces in that rotation that they don't have right now. But, again, I think Molly and Neil Allen and that coaching staff, and, heck, I know Terry feels worse than anybody that this has transpired. I don't even have to speak to him to say that. I know he's doing his darnest to try to turn this around. And let's, again, we're a 500 ball club. That's our hope. And anything better than that, we're playoff bound.
Well, you know, it's so go ahead, Pete.
Can I jump in real quick? Yeah, I think what Al's really saying is have some fun and relax. I mean, when you look into the dugout and you see not a lot of energy there or concern, and let the game come to you. I think that's important too. Maybe
sure.
That with the first year manager as well, he's making decisions that he's never had to make before. So there's got to be a little bit of a learning curve there too as you work your way through that process. So I agree with Al. It's all about just relaxing and let the game come to you. And by the way, that Central Division could be the best in baseball too.
Most definitely.
Well, in Kansas City, I mean, if the team, they could leave here tomorrow still undefeated. They're undefeated now. Your Twins have won just the one win. Pete Wagner, we're talking to Pete and Al Newman. Gene Larkin joins them every Saturday on Deck Radio, 11 to noon on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Now, Rod, actually, he was just my guest before you guys. Ron Rabinovitz was on with you, pen pal of Jackie Robinson. What do you guys have planned for this Saturday?
This Saturday, it's going to be we'll try to pull some more off the ledge, or we'll be celebrating a couple of big wins against Kansas City, one against the Cleveland Indians. We're also going to be talking to Justin Musil, who's got his pulse on the high school baseball world and what's going on out there. We'll take a look at some of the Gophers and spend a lot of time working with this Twin situation. We have plenty of takes from Al and Gene, which are going to be a blast.
Hey, Al, I haven't asked you this. I wanted to ask you, when did you stop watching the game as a scout or former player and watch it as a fan? Or do you still look at it with more of an eye as having been a player and a scout and been involved in baseball for so long?
Well, you know, I can honestly say the first time I stood up and cheered like a fan was that game 163 at the Metrodome where they won the game and they clinched the playoff spot. I believe it was against Chicago. And I stood up and I started to cheer and I looked at some of the I said to Sarah, I said, I'm a fan. Just like that, it hit me. But I watched boys as a teacher or a former player or coach. And the whole time I'm watching is I'm hoping that young players are actually watching what's happening instead of looking for a highlight. Because that's how you learn the game. And right now, a lot of those young Twin ball players are in the big league fans themselves questioning whether they belong there. And a start like this just catapulted to a different level, and you just hope that they can settle down and again, as we said here, relax and let the game come to you instead of forcing the issue. You don't play relaxed when you do those things.
Yeah, and you don't want to be sitting there saying, do I belong here? Hey, Al, we appreciate it. Al Newman, former player with the Twins, has been involved in baseball. How many years have you been involved in baseball? Since you what, 7, 6, 5?
I'd say since 8, 9 years old, I've been in one form or the other.
Wow.
It's been a great ride learning the game. Still learning.
Yeah, I'd say you can know plenty. And Pete Wagner, who knows plenty himself, catch them and Gene Larkin every Saturday morning, 11 to noon, with On Deck Radio here on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Pete, now, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
My pleasure. Right. Thank you.
All right, we'll see you guys. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll be joined by Star Tribune columnist Jim Suhan. Also has his podcast at suhanunfiltered.com. Check him out in both places. We'll be right back with Jim.
Passionate sports talk.
Teddy Bridgewater.
He throws it pretty deep.
No one better at throwing
ball.
An accurate football than Teddy Bridgewater.
No one
more accurate.
What?
That's a bold
Aaron Rodgers?
I love that kid throwing a deep football.
On your sports station, 105 The Ticket.
Joined.
Make away the flag.
We are joined by Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. And Jim is righter than ever. He won't see me at the Wolves game tonight. Jim,
you... Because you have a wife.
Partially that, but you're doing the mop-up on the Twins or the Timberwolves, that final that goodbye, the farewell.
I'm going tonight to kiss the Wolves goodbye after, you know, a really memorable season. Then tomorrow I'll go right off the Twins for us.
You go write them off. Well, pretty much could do something for both. What do you think about Tyus Jones declaring? Is that that's not really unexpected, I would say.
It's not unexpected. I would have liked to see him stay one more year, be the focal point of the offense, get a little bit stronger. But he's a good player. I think he's going to be a good NBA player. I don't know if he's going to be a great NBA player. That's hard to determine. But I think he's going to be a good NBA player. I would want him running my team. You know, the variables with him are like the variables with a lot of young players, and including, as we talked about the other day, with Steph Curry came out. You know, he was not a guaranteed star. You know, physical strength and shooting range will be the big variables for him. Good thing about him is he's a worker. He's a gym rat. He will put in the work. You know, that's the one regret I have about Rubio is that he just hasn't put in the work on the jump shot yet. I have no doubt Tyus will do the work.
No, I'm sure of that, too. I think he's going to be a very good pro, and I think he also, had he stayed another year, depending, I guess, who would be in the draft next year, but how much higher or how much better opportunity can he have than being the most outstanding player in the national championship game, leading his team to a title? I don't know where he's going to wind up getting drafted, but his stock had to go up. Now, some people are saying he could be a late first-round pick. I think he could be a lottery pick. I mean, if you talk to – it's a lot easier to find guys to talk NFL draft than NBA draft. What have you been hearing?
I've been hearing mid-teens to maybe early 20s.
Somebody's going to get a steal if that's the case.
And let's face it, there are a lot of great point guards in the league right now. There are teams that just don't need a point guard. And, you know, David Kahn is the only guy who's ever going to take three point guards in the first round. Most teams that have a point guard will not draft a point guard. I know, crazy, but that seems to be the way the NBA works. They only want one guy on the court playing that position at a time. So I think, you know, mid-teens to early 20s, you know, if he stays another year, he wouldn't, you know, listen, in terms of team accomplishments, this one would be hard to match. In terms of individual accomplishments in the NCAA tournament, this would be hard to match. But if he stayed another year, he'd have another year under Krzyzewski, who really plays the pro-style offense. He would have another year of physical development, and he would have a year where everybody looked to him for the big shots instead of, you know, Okafor being kind of the default go-to guy.
Well, but that's the thing that was so great for him in the championship game. No Okafor, less of Justin Winslow. He just took the game over, and I think he could have done that a number of times had he, had he decided he wanted. But he had these other guys. He didn't have to do something like that. You know, I'm taking a quick look at to see if it's going to be. You would think, okay, let's if it goes in the order, the Timberwolves and Knicks. There's other teams certainly could jump in there. But is there any one of these teams? Is it possible? No, here's a team. They're the Lakers. Right now, they'd be sitting fourth, but it depends on how it goes. If someone can get both Okafor and come back and get Tyus later in the round, that would be huge for a team.
That's a possibility. If somebody has two first round draft choices, I could see that happening. Absolutely. Okafor is going to be really interesting. I've come to really like Towns more than Okafor at this point. Maybe I'm overreacting to the way Okafor played down the stretch. But I see Towns being, you know, more defensively willing, more defensively capable, being just as capable of attacking the basket. Okafor is a little flashier, can impress you a little more, but I think Towns has a nice direct approach. But the good thing for once is the Wolves aren't going to get the pick that is just outside the window of good players. They aren't going to get Leitner instead of Shaquille. I think the top four or five players in the draft have fairly equal ratings. You know, they play different positions, and everybody wants a big man, so those guys will probably go first. But I don't think there's any chance the Wolves ending up without a good player this year, even if they have bad luck in the lottery.
Well, you know what becomes a little bit of a problem for them, or an issue? You know, because they'll do their job tonight and lose, so they'll have the first slot, meaning. Before the balls go through, they can't finish any worse than fourth, I believe. Is that right?
Right. That's exactly my point.
All right, but here's what they'll be looking at. Karl Anthony Towns or Okafor goes one and two, probably in that order. D'Angelo Russell goes three. Well, the next best player is Justice Winslow, another small forward.
So, I don't think Justice Winslow is the next best player. He's a nice player. I don't think he's big and strong enough to really dominate at that position right away. I think D'Angelo Russell is the best, two, three, four kind of player. And then the kid whose name I can't pronounce.
Kristaps Porzingis?
Yes.
The Latvian kid.
Yes, he's a very talented guy. So I think to me, those are the four top players. Towns, Okafor, Russell, and the guy whose name I can't pronounce.
Porzingis.
Thank you. Porzingis. I'm just going to call him Porzingis for now.
The Porzingis.
Exactly. I think those four guys are all would fit in great with the Wolves. All could be really good players. And again, they're going to get one of them. Maybe for once, they'll have bad luck that turns into good luck. Maybe they will end up with a third or fourth pick, and the right guy will just magically fall to them, and they won't be able to screw it up.
Well, I don't think you could be, if you wind up with, if you got the third pick and you got D'Angelo Russell, that's not exactly a consolation prize.
I tell you what, if you have Rubio, D'Angelo Russell, Wiggins, and LaVine maybe backing up, I don't think LaVine's a point guard. But if he's backing up there too, and maybe spend a little bit of time point guard and maybe more time at wing next year, that would start to look like the Golden State Warriors in terms of entertainment value. Now the Warriors are—I don't want to make that comparison in any serious way. The Warriors have learned how to play defense. They're a spectacular team. Curry's one of the best players in the league. Thompson's spectacular, but it would start to be really fun to go to basketball games.
Yeah, that wouldn't be too shabby. But again, if you were to insert the name Karl Anthony Towns or Jahlil Okafor, that makes it fun too.
Yeah, that's the thing. The great thing about the Wolves is they have so many needs that they don't have to be two position picks here. Obviously, they don't need a point guard, but there's not a point guard who you would want to take in the first four picks anyway. You wouldn't take a three because that's where Wiggins is, but there's not really a three who's going to be there. So they're going to have to either with a two, a four, or a five, which will fit right in.
Now if they can get the first three picks, they should be in great shape there. I don't know enough about Porzingis. Kristaps.
Very talented, might be the most polished of all those players we're talking about. Because, Okafor, Towns and Russell are all very young. There's nothing wrong with that. A lot of players make the jump and end up being great players. But, Porzingis, as I'm going to call him from now on, might be the most polished and most ready to help team right now.
And is he ready to come? He will come to the NBA? He's not going to say, well, I'm going to play another year here in Latvia.
Latvia is nice this time of year, but I think he wants to play.
It's nice. All right, Jim, what do you got? What's on? Last night you did a podcast with Russo, right?
Yep, last night Russo. Thursday, a special edition of Russo calling me from St. Louis.
Yep.
I'll be at the Liffey, so he'll be calling me there. And then Friday at O'Gara's with Jerry Zagoda. And I think we also put up the Gene Glynn interview that is on the site now.
Oh, that's good. There's a lot there, and you should go and visit SuhanUnfiltered.com. Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, take care. We're going to come back and be joined by John Tower, coach of St. Thomas basketball. He can talk now about, Tyus Jones and what he thinks, because now he's declared for the NBA draft. And also talk about John. He's got a lot going on. He's got some basketball camps coming up. And I want to talk to him about what he sees and what he knows about some of these NBA draft-eligible players. We'll do that when we return.
Joined Radioactive Sports at the office on Washington Avenue for Twins Ticket Friday.
The superstar Mike Morris and I will be there from 4 to 7 outside on the patio, along with our ticket girls, giving away tickets to that night's game and future games.
From the office on Washington and 844 Hay Workers, get fueled up before the game with $3 cold domestic drafts and a great full menu.
Radioactive Sports, live at the office on Washington before Friday Twins home games. Then walk right over to Target Field.
Finally, an office you can have fun at with Sports Radio 105. The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob Sansevier Show. Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
Come on, give me some Frankie Valli. Can you do that?
I don't think I can. Can't bring myself to do that.
Just do it. All right, we're joined by John Tower, coach of the St. Thomas basketball team and a psychology professor there. Now, John.
Hey, Bob.
What's wrong? I mean, Frankie Valli, can you sing with in that? You can't sing that falsetto like he did, can you?
No, I wouldn't even attempt it.
I think we'd hurt ourselves. But man, he could sing, no question about it. Now,
no doubt. Now,
John, let me ask you this, because I know that the weather's getting nicer. When do your camps start? Are they within the next few weeks or months?
We start right when the kids get out of school. So June 8th is their first week, and we run basically 9 straight weeks during the summer. They're week-long camps. Most of them are day camps. We have 1 week of overnight, which is about as much as I can handle with hundreds of kids running around the dorms. But yeah, this is the 21st summer. Amazingly, I started these back when I was a senior in college, and it's just been it's been really fun to work with thousands of kids in the community over the years, and several have gone on to play for us, really prominent roles. So one of my assistants, Mike Keating, was there the first year we had camp back in 1995. So it's been just an amazing experience, and they always fill up, so we'd love to have kids sign up soon if they're interested.
Well, that's got to be neat when you have a kid who went to a camp, then played for you, and now is an assistant, right?
It really is. You know, you can kind of see your own effects. Anything he does well, he gets credit for. Anything he doesn't, I screwed him up through camp, through coaching him, and summer camps, some coaches love to golf in the summer. We always joke we're bad at golf. We don't have the patience, the money, nothing like. I'd rather be in the gym, and it's fun. My two sons, Jack and Adam, are 12 and 10, and so they're there just about every week stuck in the gym with me, and it's really, as a dad and a coach, it's about as good as it gets.
And that is, and you do it's 9 separate clinics, 1 each week, right? We have any that go longer than that.
So kids will go Monday to Friday. Lots of kids go, 3 or 4 of the weeks throughout the summer. And it's a fun way for them to work on their skills. They get to meet a lot of new kids. And most of the employees at the camp are guys who play for us. So it's fun for the kids who come to camp, who go to a lot of our games, to get coached by the players they look up to.
Now, John, have you been following? You obviously heard about Tyus Jones declaring, and I think we've talked about that on the air. It makes sense after what he did. How much higher can he come out next year? But I'm guessing as a college coach, you're not crazy about seeing when guys come out, or do you just, it's a reality and you just accept it?
I think at this point it is the nature of the business that you certainly, if I had an accounting major, a psychology major who came to me and said I could make $4 million guaranteed over the next 2 years, or I can stay 3 years and finish my psych degree, well, it would be hard to tell them don't. And especially because I think a kid like Tyus, athletically, he's never going to overwhelm people athletically. And so I think he probably is at his peak for the NBA draft. And, I think even Coach K, we've talked about this, he's adapted over the years where he couldn't stand it the first time his guys went and left early. And it's part of the reality of Division I sports. We don't really deal with it. And our guys, we just had our banquet on Sunday, and our 3 seniors were all set to graduate and move on to a number of different endeavors, and it's just a different beast. But I don't think anybody could blame Tyus to accomplish what he did as a freshman. It's truly amazing. Although anybody who's watched him since he was in 8th grade, it's hard to be amazed by anything he's accomplished.
Now, Karl Anthony Towns and Jahlil Okafor are both going to come out, and you can talk about these guys now. I don't want to put you in any predicament, but it seems like Jahlil Okafor was the consensus first overall pick until basically the final weekend of the Final Four, when he had the national championship game where he got schooled a little bit and got into foul trouble. Now Karl Anthony Towns is a guy. Where do you? I mean, are they that close, or do you think Towns is clearly above, or do you put Okafor above him in terms of what they can do at the next level?
Yeah, we were just talking about this today in a meeting that, the science of drafting, it's such an imperfect science for a couple of reasons. One is it's not an individual sport like golf or tennis where you could really profile a guy's personality and try and figure out who's going to be the guy that's going to deal well with adversity, who's going to deal well with millions of dollars in their bank account. I mean, those are hard things to do in individual sports. And then you add in a team factor that if a guy gets drafted by a bad team, you look at Karl Anthony Towns, they just went 38-1. So they lost one game this year, and the Timberwolves have lost 65 games. So how is a young guy like that going to respond? Because he's going to go to a team with a losing record in all likelihood, unless he gets traded.
Yep.
Those are the hard things to predict. But watching those two, I think Towns is he's a safer pick in the sense that he's a little taller. I think he's more skilled. He's got better touch, and he's a better defender. I think Okafor has a chance to be a rare back-to-the-basket guy that don't come along these days very often. But defensively, his defense, not just on Kaminsky, but really the last two weekends, he did not have huge games in the last four rounds of the tournament. If you force me, I'd take Towns, and I think there's some other guys that might contend for the number two pick even.
Well, one of them would probably be just D'Angelo Russell then, right?
Absolutely. I think he might be. And then the young man who went over to play in China, he was signed with SMU and he decided to go over and...
Emmanuel Mudiay?
Yes. And he's a pretty special talent as well. So I have a hunch before it's all said and done that those two are going to be talked about. I think Towns will be the number one pick unless a team just doesn't need that position.
Boy, wouldn't that be something if Okafor slid down to fourth or something like that. Wow.
You never know. And, you know, part of it, too, is you look at a guy like Kaminsky. You could see Kaminsky going into the NBA and, you know, never being a star. But, gosh, his talent and what he did in the Final Four, what he did against Kentucky, what he did against Arizona and against Duke, I mean, that had to dispel a lot of critics who are going to say, you know what, as long as he stays healthy and continues to get stronger, he's going to be a really versatile offensive threat in the NBA for years.
Yep. Hey, John, thanks so much for taking the time. John Tower, coach at St. Thomas, psychology professor there. We'll talk to you next week. We're going to turn things over to superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson. They're down over by Hubert before the Wolves' final game, and I'm going to be heading over to Old Chicago and Eden Prairie. I'll be there from 5 to 7. Come out and join me there. We got plenty of great gifts and prizes to give away. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Your all-day sports talk leader, 105 The Ticket.